Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We wanted to get an update on what is happening in the war in Yemen, and that's with regard to Saudi Arabia. It's not a story that I have followed closely, and I know that it always is sort of happening on the in the background, but I'm not clued up enough. Tembisa Fukuda is. He's a political analyst, senior research fellow at AfriAids. Good morning. Thanks for joining us once again. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So can we just start off with the very basics? What is the conflict about in Yemen?
The conflict about in Yemen started during the Arab Spring, so 2011, and then later on they then ousted the sitting president, Abdul Rabu Mansour Hadi, who then fled to Saudi Arabia, then started mobilizing there for support. So in 2015, Saudi Arabia and a coalition of the Gulf states, Egypt and others, then decided to go and wage a war against the Houthis, who were the force that actually ousted the president, Abdul Rabu Mansour Hadi. So that's how it started. So it's all about reinstalling the legitimate government, in inverted commas, according to Saudi Arabia and the government that's recognized by the international community, back into power. Currently, that power lies with the Houthis, who are backed by the Iranians.
So is it really one of these cases, almost like Syria, where we don't, it's not really about the country itself, but it's really about proxy forces?
Well, it's both. One is you had that Arab Spring of the uprising of people wanting to promote basic human rights and democratization in that part of the world. That's one. And then you had other countries, of course, who are who took advantage of that, particularly Iran, which with its expansionist ambitions of Shia Islam, and Houthis are part of that broader Shia Islam, even though they don't share the same kind of interpretation with what the Iranian Shias have, but they are Shia as well. So Iran took that advantage and started supporting Houthis, and the Saudis got upset and they wanted to push back for obvious reasons. One, Saudi Arabia wouldn't want to see Shia expansionists expanding in the region, because Saudi Arabia sees itself as the trustee or custodian of Sunni Islam. So if you're going to have Shia next door, it's a problem. But the other point, which is important, and I argued in the article that I wrote, is that Yemen is seen by many, particularly the Khalijis or the Gulf Arabs, as their homeland. And they wouldn't want to see a Shia presence in Yemen, since they regard it as their ancestral land.
In the meantime, what is the situation in Yemen? I know we read about some terrible human rights tragedies playing out there. What is the current situation?
Well, the current situation is that there's dire, you know, human rights situation. People are starving. There's millions of displaced individuals. Millions have been killed so far. So that's the situation. But we've seen the truce holding. There was a truce which was supposed to have expired on, in April 20th, and it was then extended. So it seems as if now efforts are afoot to try and restore some kind of stability in Yemen, and possibly the Saudi withdrawal, since, if you remember, in 2019, the Emiratis withdrew, and the Qataris also withdrew in 2017 when the blockade started, led by Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf states. So we hope that there's going to be some sort of negotiations moving forward, and there can be some semblance or restoration of peace and some semblance of stability in that part of the world.
Doesn't that really just create another vacuum, assuming Saudi Arabia leaves? Is Iran going to do the same? And, surely it would just create potentially another dangerous vacuum to be filled.
Well, yeah, Iran is not going anywhere after this, because if the Houthis are certainly going to be the main role players moving forward politically in Yemen. So Iran will remain an alliance of the Houthis, as they've done in Syria. I mean, we know that Bashar al-Assad is now back once again in the political platform and is accepted by the club. So Iran has got now another stronghold in Syria. In Lebanon, Iran still works very close with Hezbollah. So Iran is expanding. And that's why the Saudis were saying that the normalization of Iran and removal of sanctions, if that does happen with P5 plus one, that Iranian deal, it will again bolster Iran and give Iran much more stronger resolve to further its expansionist program, not only, by the way, in the Middle East, but throughout the world, including in countries like Nigeria, where you have that emergence of Shia or Iranian-backed movement in Kaduna State in Nigeria.
And what do we know about the rest of the world? Is the United States or the European Union or anyone else likely to get involved, even at least from a humanitarian aspect?
Well, I think they are going to get involved. And I mean, the best thing you can do is, I know people have got different views on this, but if you normalize Iran and you push them towards becoming part and parcel of the global setup, they are likely to be, to an extent, restrained by that. But if they remain out in the cold and they create their own parallel platforms, and that's where they thrive. And I think the negotiations that are currently taking place in terms of bringing them back and removing the sanctions are all aimed at doing that, giving them more responsibilities so that you ensure that they operate within the parameters. Because what you don't want an Iran that's operating with its own parallel rules and regulations outside the universal rules and regulation. And that is the way the danger lies at the moment. And I think that's what the Americans are trying to do, to pull Iran back into the fold so that they can be held responsible. Because if they don't ratify all the beautiful things that we all enjoy at the moment in terms of what regulates the world political order, they can't be held responsible. The reason why we have, for example, right now these negotiations is because Iran decided to ratify that nuclear non-proliferation treaty. If they didn't, they didn't have to negotiate. But they ratified it, and that's why now they're held responsible.
The problem is that we just don't really know what their intentions is. I mean, the Ayatollah Khomeini yesterday tweeted, "Today Zionism is an obvious plague on the world of Islam. Zionists have always been a plague, even before establishing a fraudulent Zionist regime. Even then, Zionist capitalists were a plague on the world, on the whole world, and now they're a plague, especially for the world of Islam." I mean, that was what Iran tweeted yesterday. Now, we know that there's a lot of, I don't know, I call it verbiage, it's this thing, but you know, when you read that, it's very, very scary to say, well, let's bring them in because maybe they will, you know, we've got a better chance of success. There's an inherent risk involved.
Well, we have only one political system that can help us in multilateralism. As much as we'll blame Iran for what it's doing, for example, look at countries like Israel doing similar the same thing in terms of not wanting to declare precisely what type of nuclear arsenal they have, etc.
Right, so that Israel's not threatening to nuke another country.
Certainly, but all I'm saying is that we need to adhere to this multilateralism and we bring everybody in so that everyone can be held accountable by one international law. So as much as Iran is facing what it's facing at the moment in terms of international condemnation, and of course I do condemn Iran
for threatening
the stability of any country.
I don't think otherwise.
But we should do the same with everyone. We should all push towards one international standpoint where all of us are held responsible, whether we threaten the other or not, but we must be held responsible for our actions. And these dangerous weapons, as we see at the moment with Vladimir Putin, threatening to nuke all of us because he happens to be upset.
Because he's having a bad day.
There must be a way that brings everybody together so that all of us can be held responsible, because there are a lot of these bullies and irresponsible individuals. Whenever they're upset, they will start threatening their neighbors, etc. And that cannot be acceptable.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. It is about to go at 7 o'clock. Fascinating conversation. Thank you, as always, to Mbisa Fikuda, political analyst, senior research fellow at AfraGe. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.